We'll call the Gage County Board of Supervisors to order for Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021 at 8:46. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Haxby, Schuler, Tiemann, Dorn, Byers, and Lytle. Up first is the consent agenda. Approve general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held May 19th, 2021. Approve all claims through June 2nd, 2021 in the amount of $514,884.03. Accept claim number 21060075 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC in the amount of $397.81. And claim number 21060079 to RL Tiemann Construction in the amount of $4,454 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved by Byers, second by Dorn. Any discussion on any items? Seeing none, I would ask you to vote. Seven in favor, the motion carries. Up next is a regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 21060075 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC in the amount of $397.81 and claim number 21060079 to RL Tiemann Construction in the amount of $4,400.54. This brings the total amount of claims approved through June 2nd, 2021. To $519,682.38. These are two companies I own or am associated with.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Juergens, second by Dorn. Any discussion? Please vote. Six in favor, with Tiemann abstaining. Up next, comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Anyone may comment on any matter that is not on the agenda. However, no board action can be taken until the following board meeting unless the board declares it an emergency. You're on the agenda at 9:15. Unless you want to go now.
We have to call.
Okay, no.
So you can do your committees or...
Okay, we'll go through committees. Building and grounds, winter lights.
Dave.
Good morning.
Morning, Dave.
Morning.
This is getting to be an old discussion, but the bus stop, I am sending out, taking bids again. We did make some changes on preferably just having a short piece of driveway instead of having it go all along the west side of the building and then just planting it to grass. Whenever we've looked at it, there's so much damage in there, it's just hard to picture putting, you know, trying to fix the damage with new concrete. And it just seems like it'd be a lot more logical to just have a shorter driveway in there and then just replace sidewalk along 6th Street and Washington Street and then plant the rest to grass. So I did call out for bids on that. Hopefully we'll have them back by next board meeting. I talked to Nicole at the extension office after we talked about carpet bids and things like that. She was fine with not getting carpet at this time, and she had a wish list of some smaller items that she would like to have done out there, which is things that I could actually do myself. But one thing she did bring up was at least to get some new flooring in just those small entryways. Those were kind of curled up and looking sad, so I think that's something we could do. Greg Dennis, he held off last week. He's here today putting on the waterproof sealer remover, and then he'll start repairing. Hopefully we'll have some nice weather for him, and he'll get that section taken care of. The two trees on the west side of the yard that we planted last November, we actually planted four. The two on the north side did really good. The two on the west side took a beating with that cold snap. I had Nicole from the extension office come out, take a look at them. And she just felt like since it was new succulent growth on them, they just really caught that 30 below temperature and couldn't take it. I did reach out to the Holiday Lights, and they sounded like they would be okay with buying two new trees. We might go with a little bit smaller one this time. They did ask if we could get one with a guarantee, which is kind of a catch 22 on that. You're going to pay more for a guaranteed tree, so we'll check both ways and see how that works out. That's pretty much what I have. Why more evidence? I am going to check on getting some large fans, exhaust fans in there. We talked about the issues of, you know, whether the sheriff should have storage behind the bus stop, and I think the recommendation was to try and keep it down in that building. So
the sheriff let me know Cousin Eddie's RV there sold for $750 too. So
I heard the sheriff bought it.
I thought that looked like it at his place. But, one other thing, there was a lot of comment this weekend over not having the flags out. And I said I did not realize those were all donated service flags from people's caskets. That, and, I mean, there's already reverence with the flag, but, I mean, like we said, that's a whole nother level of reverence. Senator Byers and I were talking. There's a lot of people that really wanted those flags up. Well, there's a lot of fear not to ruin someone's burial flag also. With the winter lights, I know this is a crossover and not in their wheelhouse. Would the winter lights consider, or could you ask the winter lights committee if they would consider looking at pricing flags? I mean, that, at one point in time, you said that was a $20,000 expense.
I think, well, yeah, 16 or 17, I thought it was. I can sure ask them. I know when they did give money for that, it was to only be used for winter lights.
Yeah. There's restrictions on that.
So that's not an option. No, there.
Well, and there is another another outside committee that has money that might be able to work on that also. But you might get a hold of my wife and talk to her about that.
That would be great. It was sad. I know Scott was excited. I read the comments and I could see the disappointment in people that we didn't have them. I
had calls all day and into the night. I've had them for 2 days of people who were so upset.
And I would ask people, please be patient on that. I mean, that is a burial flag, right? And if it gets rained on, that the colors will bleed between those. They cannot be used outdoors in rain events, and all of us are sad. I mean, that looks beautiful when you come through town and you see all the flags flying. But at the same time, I'd ask everyone, please have some respect for those burial flags. As much as we all want to see them up, our own personal wants, have some respect for that donated flag that was on a service member's casket.
I totally agree. The answer is to get some all-weather flags. I have always felt, I actually brought a flag down. I don't need to show up, but it is an old flag. It is so crisp, yet it just looks beautiful when they fly those. And anybody that's gone to a funeral and seen what those flags represent with taps being played, those are so special. I can't think of anybody that has one in their house would ever take it out of a case and put it up during rainy weather. So it is disappointing, and I think I actually came up with a plan on even if we just did the south side of the building with flags, that'd be 70 flags of all weather flags. If chances of rain, we could still put those flags up there. Not nearly as sentimental as the burial ones, but it would be something we could do.
In that weather event.
Yeah.
But Monday, at posted time, I wanted to put them up, but maybe 2 hours later, you could have put them up.
And I think that was a possibility, but to line up with the volunteers that come, you know, they kind of need to have some structure of knowing what's going on. Usually, as a rule, it takes about 2 hours to put them up and about 2.5 or even 3 hours to take them back down. So,
well, I had half a dozen organizations get a hold of me that said if all they'd have to do is be asked and they would help put those flags up.
That would be great. I've been here 20 years now, and I've tried to help almost all those times. And we've had a stretch of bad luck here lately. There's been a lot of days where you almost hope it does. Like on Monday, I was hoping it did would rain, so then it would look like it was a smart thing to do. And then when it doesn't rain, you look like you're not so smart. So
trying to gamble on weather is a no-win situation. Dave, irregardless of whether we have organizations ready to help with that right now, would you look into pricing all weather flags, at least for your south side plan?
I would, yeah.
I'm guessing if we start working on this, there will be a bunch of service groups that would be very interested in helping, even if it's just for those days that we don't know. There's a lot of public support for that. So let's maybe start on that and see if there's any groups that want to help. Gary?
Why don't we look at getting a number for all the flags that we would normally put up? And then if we choose to go with just the south side or whatever, we can always go down to that number. But why don't we look at the full program?
Yes, 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 I agree.
I think if we're going to go down that road, I think that the money can be found to get the whole thing done. Because
yeah. Absolutely, let's look at everything. Let's do it all.
And although we do apologize to the public for those flags not being up, I really do ask for some patience there. Those are a very, very special item.
Can I get one real quick? I have it in the other room.
It was pretty embarrassing. I drove all over the county, and every cemetery, every village had their flags up, and we're the only ones that didn't.
That's the thing. I mean, those probably are all weather flags all over where these are a special flag. I mean, these are why we have the flag.
This is an older one. You can see the stars are all stitched on there. It's got a little bit of age showing on it, but I mean, they are still so crisp. I have seen some of these Steve Norton back in the 80s, I think it was. Or
we had them get wet, and they're streaked. They bled.
White will turn pink. And
yes, they did.
They have the name of the person.
What about more?
They're just
because the plate matches the name of the person on the flag. Now, they don't fly the flag and the pole together because it's not possible to keep them together, but that's how that program was set up with. And that person could come back and ask for their flag if they want. So they're all numbered and named that they could get their flag back.
Hopefully, I just hope the public knows that we were ready for it. We love to put them up. This is an honor to put them around the courthouse. And I heard some of the comments where they said, well, I think most people are confused. They don't know if it's the city or the county, and it's neither. It's all volunteers, and those people are not lazy. It's supposed to start at 6:30, and they're usually here by 5:45 to put them up.
That is another good point, Dave. This isn't a city or county or municipal anything. These are volunteers putting up burial flags.
And it's quite the undertaking. Like Dave said, it's a couple hours on each end of it, putting them up and taking them down.
And even dry, these are not light flags.
No. And those people that put them up usually are rushing to a cemetery to do another veterans program. So,
well, we do thank all our volunteers that do help with this as well. And we also thank you, Dave, because I know you're intimately involved with this all the time also.
I love working at this building, and to have it lit up at Christmas time and have the flags fly on Veterans and Memorial Day is a pretty nice job to have.
Ashley, could you come up and give your name for the record?
Ashley Mason. With your big quote of all of the flags, if you could give an individual quote, families might be willing to just donate to purchase one flag. The community was really upset, and many of the families thought it was a cost issue, and I think they'd be willing to help cover that cost since it's all volunteer and it's not county or city supported.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to make sure that people know we would still like to fly the burial flags whenever
possible. That's a good idea, though. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would donate to this.
Yes. And again, we have a courthouse corporation that has some cash that could contribute to this.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that we have a connection to that, and we'll lean on you, Senator.
Do. Lean.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks, Davey.
Equalization.
Nothing.
Finance and insurance.
Large ticket items. City of Wyomore, quarterly EMS services, $10,000. G-Works, GIS tech support, $12,755. Beatrice Concrete, sand and gravel, rock and gravel, $54,820.45. Cather and Sons Construction, asphalt material, $11,667. MIPS Incorporated for the Register of Deeds, digitalizing and indexing records, binding books, $15,800.
Human Resources, Employee Relations. Anybody want to take HR? We will be talking about our new Highway Superintendent later in the meeting, Mr. Juergens?
I'm just looking down that list. We have approved or disapproved hiring new Highway Superintendent. Basically, we're hiring Assistant Highway Superintendent. With that in mind, that's what we're doing right now.
We'll have to figure that terminology at that point because we talked about an assistant in training or if we want to use assistant and then move them. There was talk both ways on that.
On the job description, it was for an assistant, correct, Don?
That's what we gave them.
Okay.
It would, irregardless, the person will not be replacing, well, irregardless, the person will not take over Galen's duties. Galen will be training this person, and we assume eventually that will be the person that comes in behind him.
No.
Law enforcement, emergency management. Nothing happened this last week or so? All right.
Well, normal stuff.
Okay. Emergency management?
More on zoning, and I'm just going to draw your attention to the letter that we addressed during committee meeting, but that letter is coming from Gage County Zoning in reference to the recommendation to oppose the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership. So I'll just draw your attention to that, and we'll just wait for that area of the meeting to come up.
All righty. Road and Bridge.
I'm the one that read this, and I read it so fast, I really don't know how to read it. Asphalt crew's been busy, bridge crew busy, dirt crew busy. John Deere delivered two motor graders. One will go to Adams. Checking for sure if it fits in the old shed again. Stay-built continued armor coating are done on Claytonia North and South, DeWitt and Ellis, and South First Road, and now are working on Wyomore Blue Springs. I assume, Galen,
yes.
That is all complete?
The Blue Springs area, and we'll be moving to Barnston later on today.
Okay.
With that, we will, do you have Jared on the phone? We'll move on to Mr. Jared Reimers from Washington. He'll give us an update from Congressman Adrian Smith's office over the phone. Jared, do you want to give us your name and post for the record, and then we'll give you the floor.
Sounds great. Well, I'm Jared Reimers. I am Congressman Smith's district coordinator and representative for the Gage County area, and based out of his Grand Island, Nebraska office. And my update today is not terribly long. I just want to cover reminder of what the congressman's district operations can do for you as well as your constituents, and then I've got a few legislative items to cover. And I'm happy to take any comments, questions, concerns at the end. But as far as the congressman's district operations are concerned, the primary purpose of the staff that are based in the district, particularly out of the Grand Island office, I apologize, is to provide congressional casework assistance to constituents of the 3rd District. The purpose of congressional casework is primarily to provide constituents with an avenue to appeal federal issues that they are encountering. So whether that's requesting assistance with a grant, expediting a passport, have somebody that needs assistance with citizenship paperwork, or as has been a very common question as of late, needing to work through SBA loan assistance, or you need help communicating with USDA rural development. It really doesn't matter the width and breadth of issues that casework can cover is as broad as the amount of items that the federal government can interact with. There is one small exception, though, that we cannot assist with in any capacity whatsoever, and that is any issue that involves the court system. And that really boils down to the separation of powers all the way back to the Constitution as to why the congressman's casework staff cannot interfere with anything involved in the court system at all. But as long as there's not a court issue involved, it is very likely that we will be able to provide some sort of assistance with any casework question that we may be presented with. Legislatively, the congressman is the senior member of what they call the Select Revenue Measures Subcommittee of the Ways and Means. Oh, my goodness, I apologize. Of the Ways and Means Committee. The Select Revenue Committee is the name that the current majority caucus has given to the Tax Policy Committee. So what that means is that the senior Republican, the congressman, will be the primary voice in the House for tax policy efforts that are the opposite end of the argument, if you will, to the items that the Biden administration and Speaker Pelosi are presenting. And then that's part of the reason that he would have been involved in this anyway, that he is one of the co-sponsors of the efforts to oppose the Biden administration's increase in the estate tax, as well as modifications to the step-up and basis taxes. In addition, he has co-sponsored the legislation that is actually one of the original co-sponsors of the legislation to oppose the administration's 30 by 30 program. Basically, the legislation would bureaucratically tie the hands of the executive branch from being able to perform the 30 by 30 program. And then he is also a co-chair of the Ethanol Caucus within the House for this Congress, which allows him to be one of the chief voices on the national level for advocating for ethanol and ethanol-related policies, which is particularly poignant right now given the Biden administration's focus on electric vehicles as part of their infrastructure package that they have proposed to Congress. And to be clear, the congressman's main desires when it comes to the ethanol advocacy is both to point out that ethanol is a viable product and opportunity for alternative fuels, but also to continue to advocate for the opportunities that producers are presented with from a corn production perspective, and to recognize the realities of the size. size of the ethanol industry within both Nebraska as well as the 3rd District. Lastly, I just want to mention there's not a lot that has moved policy-wise for this, but for what is out there and will be coming when Congress goes back into session, he has been a co-sponsor and one of the main advocates for the legislation which empowers the producers, particularly in the meatpacking versus producer conversation. Basically, he's working to try to make sure that we are empowering the family farm to still be able to be a productive and viable business while recognizing the realities, especially in Nebraska, that though there is a significant value to the local butcher and one we can't ignore, the size of the employment base of the meatpacking industry as well. And he's working to try to find a middle ground in that conversation so that we can continue to empower the local farmer to be in existence and do what they are passionate about and what Nebraska's been built on for generations to come. That is the extent of my update. I'm happy to take any comments, questions, concerns back to the Congressman as well.
Questions from the board? Thank you, Jared.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity. Enjoy the rest of your meeting. Thank you.
Try to get some more sleep before you talk to us next time.
I see what I can do, I guess. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have a timed event at 9:15. It's 9:13 on the clock, so we'll bounce over that. This next item is a thank you to Senator Myron Dorn, Senator Steve Erdman, and Senator Tom Brandt in their work in passing LB 103, and also a thank you to Governor Ricketts for signing it. LB 103, of course, that was introduced by Senator Dorn. That was discussed... As it made it out of committee, Senator Erdman actually added an amendment that made it went from $2 million 2 years in a row to $5 million 2 years in a row. That was later reduced on the floor, but it was passed with a vote of 44 senators, I believe, and then later signed by the governor. We want to formally say thank you for all the senators' hard work on this. Of course, our former chair, Myron Dorn introduced this, but he has let us know along the way all the help from the other senators, especially Brandt and Erdman. I don't know if we want to send a letter up there. We've definitely been talking to them, letting them know how much we appreciate it, but we want to publicly and formally thank them.
I think sending a letter, sending a note is very appropriate.
We will get something drafted up, and do you want to have the clerk's office just draft that, and then we'll send it up there? Or do we want to – probably be good if each of us sign that when we send it up. Maybe we'll get that drafted and over at the clerk's office, and if you guys could come in and sign that, we'll send that up to the four of them at least. With that, we'll move on to our 9:15 – Even before that, just a little more touching on that. That's going to be $4 million over a couple years. That effectively will reduce our payments on this judgment by 1 year. So anticipating approximately $3 million from property tax and approximately $1.25 million to $1.5 million on sales tax at current projections. Possibly more. I mean, it's effectively a year off of our judgment payments. So the light is at the end of the tunnel. We're in that four-year range and 3 years potentially with this. We're going to keep clicking away, and this will be behind us before we know it. But with that, we'll go on to our 9:15 event discussion on the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage area. I suppose we have several people online, as well as people in the audience that want to speak. I don't know if we want to start with our P&Z. That'd probably be a good place to start. They've discussed this at their meeting last week, and we have a representative here. Terry, do you want to come up and give your...
Eric, can we get the Zoom meeting before Terry talks so they can listen in to this too?
She is on here. Hello on... Let's see here.
Should I go ahead and...
Hello on Zoom. Can you hear me? Maybe not.
I'm going to hit... Can you hear me?
Just pass those around. Thanks, Terry.
I just heard you over here, just a little delay, Don.
Okay.
Yes, sir. If you click that.
Don, I can hear you.
They can hear you.
X out of this.
They can hear you. She just said they can.
Okay.
And then if you.
This is muted because that's for me to talk.
Oh, okay. Terry, would you give your name for the... We won't have to swear you. It's not a public hearing, but if you...
Terry Acton, for the record.
And Terry's with Planning and Zoning. You're our official rep. You guys went over all this here just last week. If you want to dive into this, okay. We'll just kind of see where this goes.
Good morning, Commissioner, Chairman Thiemann and the rest of the board. Another beautiful day in Gage County. So we were tasked with researching the National Heritage Areas, the proposed one that's coming or trying to be developed in Kansas, Nebraska, and we would be part of that. So we, our group, researched it, and during that time, the governor sent out a letter that everybody's probably all seen by now. So in his letter, to get to the meat and potatoes of it, it's down in the middle of there where it says, furthermore, designations such as this would require a National Environment Policy Act plan. So go to your NEPA guide for NHA management. I copied that off, and everybody's got the first three pages of this plan to get to what I think and our commission thought was most concerning is at the very top there, if you were responsible for developing a National Heritage Area Management Plan, you are also responsible for ensuring that the management plan complies with NEPA and other federal environmental protection laws. So you drop down into the other highlighted areas, and I'll drop down to 1.2.1. To implement this policy, NEPA requires that federal agencies prepare in-depth studies of the impacts of major federal actions significantly affecting the quality of human environment as in the integral part of the decision-making process. This is true whether the action is generated by federal agency or an agency partner, such as an NHA coordinating entity. So your NHA coordinating entity is made up of non-elected people. And so then I jump over to the next page, and you start to see where that you've got layer after layer of bureaucracy that's over the top of you now that you've decided to include yourself in the boundaries of an NHA. You also said, yes, we are going to welcome in all these layers of bureaucracy to take over your area. You got the Department of Interior, and then you got the National Park Service, you got NEPA. NEPA will come into your conservation district. So NEPA will be at FSA. NEPA will probably be in NRCS. And when you want to go in and sign up for CRP, you're going to have NEPA looking at your land. Whereas now you don't have NEPA looking at your land.
Done. Yes, you do. You have had since 1970. You weren't aware of it, but every project I did on your farm with government cost share, we did, and the other night at your commission meeting, it did not ring a bell with me, NEPA, at the time. But
well, that's why I asked you.
I know. And you said you didn't know. At the time, and I didn't. But we never called it NEPA. It was environmental concerns that we had to address. And maybe NEPA was mentioned. It's been 10 years since I've been retired. It didn't ring a bell with me at the time. I didn't recognize it, so I wasn't going to answer any differently and take a guess. So after the meeting, I did some research, and it came to me that, well, yes, we did this on every meeting. FSA does any federal funds. Any federal funds at all have always been applied by NEPA. We have maps that designate cultural resources, which is, fossils or even old farmsteads that have historic value. And if there is something like that there, if a known area, we had to contact an archaeologist. Just east of Wymore, there's cultural resources. We had an archaeologist come out and do a evaluation before we could continue the project. We were able to continue. They didn't stop us. We had to be more observant. If we found anything, we'd have to bring the archaeologist back in. We were able to do the project. That's the only one I know that we actually, that I ever worked on. We voided putting, doing construction in a one little short area based on the archaeologist. Any of the funding, any federal funding, whether it be in our bridges that we get funding on, help with, all has to apply by NEPA. So this is nothing new.
Hence Governor Ricketts' statement in there that they were up against NEPA already with their road project that he was referring to.
Yeah, and they have been since 1970.
So I guess it's another layer that is already, according to Don, it's already there. But then, so if you take on another boundary around you, you've also agree or you have a coordinating entity that is made up of non-elected people that you are duplicating laws in within this boundary of a NHA. And so,
well, I may comment there wouldn't be any duplication. There's only one NEPA and there's only one management.
Not NEPA. I'm just whoever is going to conduct the management plan around the boundaries of the NHA, not NEPA. So
okay.
I look at Flint Hills Frontiers. Here's their management plan before it got taken off the website. I read through this thing last night. It's very got a lot of colorful pictures and a lot of sentencings and phrasings in there that it's referred to me that this is document dumping. They create a massive plan and they put a few meat and potato things in there, and if you can find them, you found them. Otherwise, it kind of gets glossed over. So an example of that would be the Cato Lake NHA that was proposed in between Texas and Louisiana. American Policy wrote a summation of what's happening there, and I can kind of read this to you to kind of go along with what it boils down to us. Real private property ownership lies in one's ability to do with your property as you wish. Zoning and land use policies are local decisions that are traditionally been the purview of locally elected officials who are directly accountable to the citizens that they represent. But natural heritage areas corrupt this inherently local process by adding federal dollars, federal mandates, and federal oversight to the mix, along with an army of special interest carpetbaggers who call themselves stakeholders. So within this massive management plan wrote out, or proposed management plan by Flint Hills, how the plan was created. Developing a regional plan is a process over the last 3 years. Stakeholders, and there's stakeholders in here a lot. And so it must be understood that heritage area affects all land in the designated boundary areas, not just recognized historic sites. So it would, so if we were in Kansas, Nebraska, one, it wouldn't be just Homestead National Monument, would be everything within the boundaries of that proposed NHA. The federal designation made from congressional legislation creating federal regulations and oversight through the National Park Service require a form of contract between state and local entities and the Secretary of the Interior. The contract is to manage the land use of the region for preservation. That means federal control and zoning, either directly under the terms of the Management Pact or indirectly. Such indirect control is the real danger, in spite of specific language in the bill which states property rights will be protected. The true damage to homeowners may well come from the private, non-government organizations that were, you know, these entities that wrote this plan, and preservation agencies which receive public funds through the Park Service. And here's the main thing. The experience with at least 49 such heritage areas now in existence nationwide clearly shows groups will convert this money into political activism to encourage local community and county governments to pass and enforce strict zoning laws. It's to encourage, and they're getting them. It's a vehicle to get the money into their hands, and then they can do what they want to do with it, and they will encourage you as much as they can to do what they want you to do through political activism. So with that all in mind, we decided to vote, and it was a 6-0 unanimous vote that we think Gage County should not participate in any National Heritage areas.
Who wrote that document? Who's
American Policy.
And who are they?
They, a research firm, I looked it up quick this morning. Now, the head title was Not One Inch, The Battle Cry for Property Rights. There had been a prior attempt to build an NHA on this lake. It's a 25,400 area lake in Bayou. It's a very large cypress swamp area. So,
Terry, did the PNC see any positives to the heritage area?
I guess if there was, nobody really pointed them out.
Did you contact anybody from a heritage area?
I did. I have not. I contacted Farmers Union. I talked to John Hansen. John Hansen told me that their opinion was that local government should be what local government is, and you shouldn't have somebody over you. I tried to talk to Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau never got back to me. It was under my understanding, Farm Bureau is for it.
Well, if you didn't, did you contact anybody that's on the positive side to get the other side of the story of the issue?
I have read a ton of stuff, and, you know, just me personally looking at it, I'm like, yeah, it's probably an all right, all deal. But I'd say in the political climate that we are in, Don, I'm pretty sure that this current administration has an army of people that are sifting down through all the departments to see how they can implement more control of private land.
Well, Terry, that's your personal opinion based on partisan politics. I don't know a planning and zoning commission should base decisions on that, and neither should a county board.
I disagree. I guess I don't know why I would be part of planning and zoning if I didn't interject my own personal thoughts on what's going on. I am local Gage County here today. I'm tired of having so-called experts outside of Gage County tell us how we should operate. We've been fed that steady diet all along.
Okay, well, let me read you this is the public law 109338, and this is just a portion of it. In general, no federal funds made available under this subtitle may be used to acquire real property or an interest in real property.
What does that law apply to directly, Don? I'm sorry.
Heritage areas.
Okay.
But
and this was, you all got an email of this. All the supervisors got an email with this in it. Section 266, private property protection. And this is not just somebody's opinion. It is public law. Access to private property. Nothing in this subtitle shall be construed to require any private property owner to permit public access, including federal, state, or local government access, to such private property. Nothing in this subtitle shall be construed to modify any provision of federal, state, or local law with regard to public access or to use of private property, private lands. Liability. Designation of heritage area shall not be considered to create any liability or to have any effect on any liability under any other law of any private property owner with respect to any persons injured on such private property. Now, I'm just reading highlighted portions of this. This is still public law here. Recognition of authority to control land use. Nothing in this subtitle shall be construed to modify any authority of federal, state, or local governments to regulate land use. Participation, and this one I want to make special note of, participation of private property owners in heritage areas. Nothing in this subtitle shall be construed to require the owner of any private property located within the boundaries of the heritage area to participate in or be associated with the heritage area. So you have the option as a private property owner to remain uninvolved with the heritage area, even if you're within the boundaries.
Don, my question for you on that, then, after hearing what Terry said, is if part of this is, it's spelled out that it's to encourage zoning changes. If you live within a heritage area and zoning changes are pushed through or lobbied through, that does affect you even if you're not a member. I watched a few years ago these folks in Washington pushed through the Waters of the U.S. or
WOTUS.
Yeah. And what we called a puddle became a wetland. What was formerly known as bad grading on a road project became a wetland, and it was federally protected. Non-flowing ditches in the country, you know, out on county roads became a wetland, and it's like...
I would have to say that was rumored a wetland because NRCS has soil scientists that go out and make wetland determinations, and there has to be three categories that it has to have: wetland vegetation, wetland soil properties, and I can't think of the third one.
The Corps of Engineers, have some comments on that?
The Corps of Engineers missed that evidently because they did determine them wetlands. Emily?
I think the board or the Planning and Zoning Commission went through all of these, and while the words on a paper from what their intent is to experiences that they researched are two very different things. We have to look at people that have already done this and they've looked into that and what experiences they have had and what we would like to avoid.
And we're just scratching the surface here. We're gonna have more discussion, but I think Terry probably gave us a good summation of what the P&Z saw. Not to stop cross interrogation there, but I guess
that's my intention with you is to get I'd like to comment on wetlands. Several years ago, we tried to enroll a little piece of property in it must have been CRP. And we were one of two candidates in Gage County that got denied. And we looked into it, and the Corps of Engineers had determined that that area was in the 100-year floodplain. And my dad was still alive, and he was probably 70. And he remembers that. I'm thinking, well, he's 70, it's never flooded in there before. But just because, those people aren't always right, for the life of us, we never could figure out how that would be in a 100-year floodplain, because if it did, the whole county, there was a major chunk of the county was underwater. So I think where you read the laws and some people will say, yeah, our provisions, the law prohibits us from taking over it. But when these entities can get federal money through the back door or the vehicle to get the money, then they've got money to operate whatever activism that they want to do. They are not politically elected people.
They're appointed. And they're locally appointed people. You could be one of them.
I could be, but they also, the way I understand it, they're these, I don't know what region is above us, but there's a region above us, and the trustees are groups of people, and they just come all the way down to us. And I don't know if NH or KNA has a board of directors or trustees yet, but I guess the question would be to go look through there and see how many ag-related people are on that trustee.
Well, we may have some others here today that
I was watching
can speak to us that can tell us that.
I was watching a video yesterday, and a commissioner asked the man how many trustees had ag relations, and there were none on a heritage area. None. Nope.
That seems peculiar.
No ag-related trustees on that heritage area.
Well, it would depend on where the heritage area is at.
Well, I think it started at the top of the Kansas-Nebraska border. It went all the way down south.
Is that the Freedom Frontier heritage area?
It's one. Could be.
I think that's the only one in Kansas right now, I believe.
And there was nobody on there that had ag background or was in farming.
Terry, from what you guys saw, the intention of this is to preserve the land as it is?
I believe it is, yeah. And if there are cultural heritage things about how this area developed, they want to preserve them. I think it just is. It's just such an easy. It's an accessible way to get hijacked for an ulterior motive through activism of whatever a group of people don't like and want to correct on their own, and they're getting federal dollars fed to them.
In your opinion, as a PNZ member and also in the ag community, if the intention of this is to keep things the way they are, what would happen if we did not have this? Do you see any big changes that would happen without a heritage area?
I can't think of anything. All I can think of is there's three national monuments in the state of Nebraska. We're lucky enough to have one of them here in our very own county. I think we need to take care of it more than we need to be concerned about 49 counties going west. That's right in our backyard. Let's concentrate on what we can do to make that the best Homestead National Monument Act there is my thought. And there's several things in that I think we're addressing through PNZ right now. And I hope we get done with it pretty soon, too. So,
any questions for Terry?
Do we need Engler to have any comments on that the monument?
We'll have a lot of comment this morning.
Okay. Want to make sure he has an opportunity to speak.
I just got a text that Kim Wilson needs to leave at 9:45.
Okay.
Can we put her on the...
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
I don't have a camera on mine, but
We don't hear you. Can you go ahead and speak, Kim? We can hear you well, I believe. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. How is everyone today?
Fine. Would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kim Wilson. I'm a professor of landscape architecture at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I'm also the executive director of the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership.
Thank you, Kim. Can you, I guess the question I have for you is, in what stage are we at as far as Kansas-Nebraska Heritage? It has to go to Congress and be passed by Congress. What steps do you have to take to get it that far?
So we are really in infancy in developing a national heritage area. We put forth our nonprofit organization status, and we hope to receive it in the next month. From there, we will seek funding to do a feasibility study. We anticipate that it's going to cost quite a bit of money because of the region that we need to survey to understand the historic and cultural significance that is of national prominence. And that will take probably a year, 2 years and a half. And during that process, we will meet with every county commissioners and Rotary clubs and county councils and city councils and Girl Scout troops around the area to help understand and garner grassroots support. And so again, we're talking 2 years out. We'll then review our feasibility study and hope that we can establish national significance in our area. And that's the national significance will then define the proposed national heritage area. We will take it then to Congress, and I think that Jim can tell you more of the specifics about how it goes through that process once it gets to Washington. Because again, we are just in the beginnings of this process.
Kim, what would our benefit to being a member of a heritage area be?
So benefits, if you opt in to be partnered with us, you would have access to federal funding.
For what?
If you were a destination, a cultural historic destination, and let's say that you wanted to improve service to your customers, you could participate in a program that we may run to help encourage and support increasing access to your, again, it's programs and money to destinations and assets. And again, Jim can give you some exact examples and specific examples associated with programs that they fund through their federal funding. Again, we are only in the beginnings of our process.
Does the board have any questions for Kim? Mr. Juergens. Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Haxby?
It was my understanding when I was reading through some of the NHA stuff was that the idea is actually to become financially independent from the government. So those handouts they give you money to get you started, and then that's it.
Could you hear her, Kim?
Again, I would defer to Jim. Yeah, I heard her. Sustainability long term, and I guess that's any nonprofit's goal and strategy. Again, I would defer to Jim because they've been in a lot longer and they can talk about their sustainability strategy.
Any other questions for Kim?
Well, just to be clear, Kim, as you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. make sure we all understand this, that before you go to Congress, you have to come to the area and visit with county commissioners, anybody that's because you want local support. Is that what you said?
That's exactly right. This is truly a grassroots initiative. We have a volunteer board who will participate, and our goal, one of the criteria is how well are you supported across the area? And I find it a little sad that people are making decisions without really truly understanding what a national heritage area can do for rural communities in this area in terms of increasing economic development.
And that's what, Kim, to interrupt, sorry, that was my question for you is what is the benefit? There's potential money to improve transportation to us or accessibility?
It's creating a network of destinations that are working collectively, regionally, to tell a story and that story has a significance. It's this network that promotes the area, and it doesn't necessarily improve roads, but recognizing that there are links between these destinations, and it's a benefit for creating long-term tourism in the area.
Isn't that what our tourism agreement is? I mean, even in just in our agreement with them, it says to promote, encourage, and attract visitors to come to Gage County.
Another question I would have for you to follow up with our P&Z, Kim, is how many ag sector members are on your board?
That'd probably be a question for Jim.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the end of that question.
Eric was asking how many ag members are on boards.
On your specific board.
Well, go ahead.
Your question is a good one. We're in transition with our board. We've had a couple people step down because of the politics associated with this and access to county funds. And so we're in the process of recreating our board. And I will specifically go out and seek ag representation. In fact, I've had a conversation with the Farm Bureau in Nebraska, and they appreciate our efforts to stabilize small rural towns through tourism. That's an ongoing conversation.
How many ag members were on your board before you started to reorganize?
I would say two, and they were out of Kansas. But again, they had second careers, and those careers were in nonprofit organizations, and they've been asked to step off because of, again, the political pressure, which is unfortunate because these were your next leaders in the counties and in your state.
Did Nebraska Farm Bureau support the Heritage area?
Did they support it? They got such pressure from their constituents that they did not support it.
Did they originally?
They got mixed up. Like most people, there's a pile on in terms of organizations that we were associated with the 30 by 30, which they now recognize that we're not. We're associated with land grabs. They now recognize that they were not. But politically, they could not support us because of their constituents. Whether it's about fact or not, it's politics.
Any other questions from the board for Kim? Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll go through the members that are on, the people here on Zoom, just kind of get through some of those, apologize to you and the audience that want to speak, but that way, if they do have to sign off. I see Jim Ogle on there. There's another member. I'm sorry, it doesn't give me your name, but if Jim would go ahead and go through his presentation for us briefly.
Jim, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm happy to do so. Thank you for the opportunity to join you. I'm Executive Director for Freedom's Frontier National Heritage Area. We cover 41 counties, 29 in Kansas, 12 in Missouri along the Missouri-Kansas border. We were originally established as a not-for-profit in 2003, and received our federal designation in 2006. The material that Don shared with you about the elements that are written in the law about what we're allowed to do and cannot do is very important. I have never talked in the 5+ years I have been the executive director to anyone about a zoning. We're not involved in those elements. We're focused on bringing together the historic sites and museums that tell one of three stories in the region that were part of our national designation. That's the settlement of the frontier, border and civil war on the western frontier and the enduring struggle for freedom. Now, we don't require anyone to participate. They all are opt-in to us. And we have more than 200 local organizations, historic sites and museums that we help promote through an app that ties their stories together, through newsletters that give suggestions for people where to visit, and the like. We have been blessed that among the 28 members of our board of directors, John Dillingham, who is one of our prior chairs, was deeply involved in agriculture, his family involved in the stockyards and the American Royal in Kansas City, and Nancy Feldman, who is a multi-generational farmer who served also as county commissioner in Douglas County, Kansas. We're adding an additional member to our board at the next meeting on June 9th. She is involved in tourism, but their family run a family farm in just outside of Dover, Missouri. The discussion you all have had about zoning, we don't do that. We have never done that. We've never participated in those questions. We've never been given direction by anyone to participate in that kind of discussion. We're about telling the larger story to engage people who travel in the area to visit more than just some of the premier sites like Brown versus Board of Education or the National World War I Museum, but some of the local sites that exist in many of our small towns that help feed into that story along the way. And that's why we created an app. We have a newsletter. We have a map that shared the tourism sites that bring all those elements in focus. There are more than 20 tourism destination marketing organizations in the area that we cover. Each of them is highly focused on their own area, but they don't bring all those stories together, and that's part of what we do.
Jim, what kind of money do you see coming from, I guess, what kind of money do you see come in? What is the financial benefit here? It sounds like you tie everything together for the different tourism organizations. You're funded federally then?
A portion of our funding comes from the federal government. This year, roughly $400,000. Our total budget is about $1.2 million. We can't take a federal dollar and draw it down from the federal government without already having a match dollar that we have generated locally.
And that comes from member organizations to your heritage area?
Yes. Comes from. We have a number of local governments and donations made, grant funding, and the like, all add up to that total revenue.
Who appoints your governing board?
The board elects other board members. Like many nonprofits, they go through the process each year of seeking folks. We have people roughly distributed between Missouri and Kansas. I think there's one more person in Kansas right now than Missouri on our 28-member board. Include a current federal appellate judge, a couple of former mayors of communities in our region, people who are involved with historic sites and museums, representing partners along the way. And we try to geographically not just put them between Missouri and Kansas, but also distribute them throughout the entire area on both sides of the state border so that there is decent representation of people who face different challenges with their historic sites and museums.
Would it be fair to say that you do zero lobbying on in your Kansas and Missouri legislatures or with zoning?
Yes, it is absolutely fair. I have literally never spoken to a zoning issue anywhere.
Any questions for Jim Ogle? Mr. Jurgens.
Do the board members on this committee draw a salary?
I'm sorry. Do the board members draw? Answer was no.
No, they do not.
Any other questions?
As I understand it, individual landowners can opt out of the heritage area. Have you had many people do that?
No one. I have no records of anyone ever opting out.
How is NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, worked for you? Any problems? Any concerns?
When your governor brought this up in Nebraska, I had to look it up. We haven't, in the 6 years I've been a part of this, we haven't dealt with NEPA. And so I was, quite frankly, ignorant of process that was being raised as a question, because that's not what we do each year when we put a work plan together for the National Park Service. And that work plan consists of things like how we're going to fund grants, run camps. We've run a program for a number of years until we hit COVID called Bus on Us that helps make it possible for schools to take field trips to partner sites. The grants help are up to $3,000, and they help people do interpretation at their various sites. So we regularly run grant programs to do that along the way. It just has not been in our wheelhouse.
Mr. Lytle.
There have been several questions about opting out. I guess what would be the process of somebody wanting to opt out? There's nobody on record of doing it, but was there a reason because the process is cumbersome, or what's...
Could you
the question
that?
Is, what would be the process to opt out?
They would just need to notify us if they did not want to participate. We are an opt-in organization. None of the historic sites and museums who are our partners, they opt in. They sign what's called a partner pledge that they want to participate, and we don't force anyone to participate who doesn't want to.
So inside of the 41 counties, every parcel of land has been opted in?
The question is, inside the 41 counties, every parcel has been opted in?
No. That wouldn't be a fair statement to say, because individuals would have to opt in as partners. That's how we're set up. And what it is defined is, when the legislation was originally passed in 2006, our boundaries were defined by the counties on the Kansas and Missouri side. If you look at our original legislation, and those were done by the representatives and senators serving at that time. None of them right now are still serving along the way. And that's how our boundaries were determined, literally by the act of Congress.
Any other questions for Mr. Ogle?
if this is an individual basis for opting in, when was it Kim from UNL?
Kim Wilson.
Kim.
Yes.
She said that they're how to get people involved is they go to the county commissioners, and if a county signs up, aren't you then opting in everyone in that county? I mean, that's the way it sounds to me. You saying it's on an individual basis, or are you going out there to every person in the county and getting them to opt in then? I mean, that's one way or the other, I think.
No, this is, the opting in is done by people who want to be partners with us, and there are historic sites and museums in the individual counties. The boundaries, like I said, were set by federal law when they passed our original authorizing legislation.
Jim, would it be fair to say then if a county did not choose to opt in, if there was some specific historical or museum, historical site, museum, monument, etc., they could opt in within that boundary of the county?
Do you want him to repeat the question?
I'm going to ask you to ask that question again because I think I have the answer you're looking for, but I'd like to hear it again.
If a county would vote not to opt into this, or a county voted to opt out, let's use Gage County specifically. We have Homestead National Park. Would the Homestead be able to opt into an area that the county did not opt into?
Once our legislation was passed and signed by President Bush, it set up our boundaries. And because it set up our boundaries, those remained our boundaries, whether any of the individual county commissions, it would take an act of Congress to change that. They're now part of federal law. So an individual is part of our legislation could send us a letter and say, I do not want to be included. It speaks to that specifically in the federal law. And then we would opt them out. And that would be part of what we recognize. But our boundaries would remain the same because they got drawn based on the county boundaries. And that's what Congress passed and President Bush signed.
So if a county board decides to pass a resolution to not allow a heritage area, does that actually keep us out of it?
Technically, again, I can only speak to my situation. We're, by federal law, our boundaries are defined. So a county can tell us that they don't want to participate, but it would take a change in the federal law to take them out of it. I don't have control over that process.
So if a county chooses to opt out of it, we're essentially, even though we're still in the boundaries, but are we taking every individual landowner, property owner, historical site out of any chance of receiving any benefits from the heritage area?
If you're in a situation like I am where the boundaries are already defined, it would require the change in federal law, and then we would opt that, and then that county could be removed. But in our case, nine counties, five in Missouri and four in Kansas, have actually passed resolution asking that they be included in Freedom's Frontier. And we hope that we'll be able to do that later with them. But it requires us to literally change federal law and our boundaries.
Unless it changes how it's formed.
One thing I want to add for Emily's question, I would like to compare the Conservation Stewardship Program, which the state of Nebraska, NRCS, designated areas that were eligible for the first CSP signups. And as time went on, other areas were designated conservation stewardship program areas. But in no way did it require anybody within that area to become a participant in CSP. It was voluntary. And I think Terry and Emily, Eddie's probably acquainted with that, that the CSP was voluntary. You come in and you had to go through a ranking system and so forth to qualify for CSP, which is a, well, conservation stewardship. It was, you got points for buffer strips, filter strips, and different conservation practices that you did and had been doing, and it rewarded you for that, if you recall that. So in my view of this, the heritage area represents the same thing. It's an area the federal government has allowed people to participate in this program if they choose to. There is no forcing anybody to do anything. So you really don't opt in or opt out. If you have something you want to promote, you approach the heritage area and see what can be done.
I would make the argument we can promote that without permission from the feds. Are there any other questions for Mr. Ogle? We have one other guest on Zoom. I'm sorry, I don't have your name on there. Could you give us your name and position for the record?
I believe you're referring to me.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Angel Cushing. I am just an old soldier's wife in Lyon County, Kansas.
Is that Lyons County?
Lyon. No S on the end.
Oh, Lyon.
County, Kansas. We are actually one of the counties that passed a resolution to opt in to Freedom's Frontiers.
Could you tell us what you saw as a benefit to opting in to Freedom Frontier?
No, I was not there. I can tell you that one of the groups or nonprofits that work with Freedom's Frontiers is called the Flint Hills Regional Council. The Flint Hills Regional Council gifted us some pretty strict zoning regulations that tried to ban barbed wire fences and electric fences here in the Flint Hills. And the significant part of that, we grow best here, is cows. We have under the soil, maybe an inch in most places, is solid rock, and that grass reaches down into the rock and it gets tough and nutritious, and we grow nice big fat cows and livestock. So we were quite shocked to make that discovery. But I actually wanted to get on here to talk a little bit about money, if that's okay. The biggest thing that I have noticed, particularly with Freedom's Frontier, is their 15-year limit is up this year in October, and they are probably going to ask Congress to extend that, because although that very same law that says that they can't apply zoning or anything else also says that they have to be self-sustainable within 15 years, and they are not. But to be very, very clear, I am not completely against the idea of a National Heritage Area. I firmly believe that if there was a National Heritage Area over Red Cloud, Nebraska, it would be absolutely fantastic, beautiful, and do wonderful things. I don't think that that National Heritage Area for the Willa Cather Foundation needs to incorporate 48 other counties or farmland outside of that area. Freedom's Frontier is a little bit different because they're trying to cover a whole Civil War area. So if they wanted to pick a city in one area and a city in another area, that would be two NHAs that would each get the federal funding each separately, because this federal funding doesn't go by landmass. We're going to assign this much money for this much land, so therefore the more land you get, the more money you get. That's not the case. It is the actual heritage area designation itself. So financially, would it not be better to pick each one of these historical sites, make that a National Heritage Area, draw that money, and have more likelihood of being financially self-sustainable at the end of the 15 years without introducing, hoarding, or embracing any other type of federal entity over large industries and agricultural areas.
So you're saying that, like, if our national monument wanted to be a heritage area, they themselves could sign up without the county?
Yes. There is no law anywhere that says no entity cannot do a national heritage area. The process is the same. You would go to... You would go to Congress and you would sponsor that study. You would go through just as what Jim and Kim talked about. You go through that entire process. You go to the feasibility study. That feasibility study is really, really important, and it's the reason why we're asking counties to pass resolutions to opt out of it. The whole purpose of that feasibility study is to take that to Congress and say, look, here's the evidence that the grassroots organization is strong and that this area is good for a national heritage area. And Mr. Ogle is absolutely correct. Even if you opt out and you pass a resolution against it, Congress, because it's a federal border and a federal law and local governments have no say, Congress can choose to make it a national heritage area anyway. But yes, if your local monument in the area wanted to be a national heritage area, there's absolutely nothing stopping them for doing that, to do that application process and to go down that road. They can do that.
Angel, just to get this other side of the story here, would you give the name of that group that's associated, you said, with Freedom's Frontier that lobbied against barbed wire? Kind of explain that portion of what you were telling us.
Sure. So the Flint Hills Regional Council is the Flint Hills Regional Council. And that is some of the biggest concerns that we have with national heritage areas is the and I don't know that partnership is the correct word. It's the board members. They tend to share board members. Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership is a good example. It shares board members with North Central Regional Planning Commission. And that is usually the entity that comes down with the regulations. For us, it was through the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Act program that the Regional Council introduced regulations to us. And what they did was come to our county commissioners and say, you'll get a lot more grant money. All you got to do is update your zoning and your comprehensive plan. That's exactly, Jim is correct. The National Heritage Area itself does not implement or push for regulations. You'll see it. You'll see references to it, like on page 421 and 423, about how beneficial regulations would be, but they don't actually push for it. That comes down to the organization, like your planning commissions and your regional councils, who share board members and often partner with these things. Financially, the benefit of the government working with nonprofits is that freedom of information request. For example, just for talking to me, there is an environmental group out of Washington, D.C., that is dropping freedom of information requests on county commissioners for having talked to me or Trent Luce or Margaret Byfield down in Texas. They can do that because the government falls under the Freedom of Information Act laws. Nonprofits do not. They're allowed to work behind the scenes. You cannot drop a Freedom of Information request on them to see what they're doing. And that is to the credit, I would like to say, of Freedom's Frontiers, of all of these organizations that I have been looking into. Freedom's Frontiers is actually one of the most transparent. Flint Hills Regional Council, for example, they, when we made them public, they scrubbed their website really, really quick. Freedom's Frontiers is not. They're actually quite transparent. And in the realm of national heritage areas, they're one of the most least invasive and the most cooperative. The problem is that the atmosphere that we are currently in, this gives an avenue that makes it easy picking. kind of inviting the house. The opting in part is a little bit concerning. One of the biggest complaints that I am hearing from farmers is, why didn't I know about Freedom's Frontiers? I'm hearing that from commissioners down in that area too. They had no idea that they were in Freedom's Frontiers, and I have a feeling that has a lot to do with why, or that the opting out is very significant due to that lack of knowledge. And to their credit, it means that they're not really impacting a whole great deal that anybody knows about. But not one person down there got a letter in the mail saying that their land is going to be incorporated into a national heritage area. They did not know, and most of them do not know. I'm hearing from them. While we've been making awareness of the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership, especially in the month of April, I would say 50% of the phone calls that I would get were people and commissioners and individuals calling me, asking me about Freedom's Frontiers. And the second most common question that I got is, why wasn't I told? Why didn't I get a letter in the mail? Why didn't anybody tell me that my land is there? So, but back to that whole money thing. Yes, anybody can start a national heritage area, and very, very small. I think that, there's some really, really small ones out there. Yuma, Arizona, for example, covers 4 square miles. So it doesn't need to be a large land mass. It doesn't need to cover industry. It does not need to cover agricultural land at all. I mean, we all love history. The amount of money in tourism is a little bit questionable. I know that they have to renew at their 15 years, not only due to COVID, but because of tourism in general. I mean, if you look at, consider the lines, if you ever stand in line to get into an event, you're going to do that at the fair, you're going to do that at the theme parks, you're going to do that at the big campgrounds at national parks. But I have never walked up to any museum anywhere and had to wait in line to get in. So it's just not financially in the long term, it is just not feasible to incorporate such a great big huge area and then have the expectations that you're going to be off the taxpayer dole at the end of that 15 years. If that were concentrated into a smaller area, maybe, perhaps. I hear there is one National Heritage Area in the country that actually became financially independent, although I have not found it, and still a ghost and a mystery out there to me. This year alone, there are 30 National Heritage Areas that have expired their 15-year time limit that are not financially independent. They have to ask Congress to be extended for more money.
Any questions for Angel? Thank you, ma'am.
May I allow Jim back on?
Let's get through everybody okay. That's here to speak. Mark, Mr. Engler, you want to come up and talk and give us your name and position, of course?
Sure.
We appreciate all of your patience. This is important, so we're trying to get broad scope.
It's all good. Good morning, everyone. I'm Mark Engler, Park Superintendent at Homestead National Historical Park. I want to first acknowledge that I'm not an expert with the National Heritage Areas. I have a general understanding of the program, should you wish to talk to National Heritage Area experts within the National Park Service, I'll be happy to provide any of you with the contact information. I thought it'd be best just to start by sharing what National Heritage Areas are and are not. National Heritage Areas are not owned or managed by the federal government. National Heritage Areas do not infringe upon personal property rights. They do not they are not units of the National Park Service. The National Park Service does not assume ownership of land inside National Heritage Areas unless it is a unit within the National Park Service. Like, for instance, I think Jim mentioned Brown versus the Board of Education in Topeka. Or like if it's the Nebraska-Kansas area, it'd be Homestead National Historical Park. That's what I'm meaning. They do not prohibit private property owners from using or building such things as fences or other structures. National heritage areas do not provide for federal acquisition of land. National heritage areas do not abridge rights of any property owner, require any property owner to permit public access to the property, alter any land regulations, or diminish the authority of the state to manage fish or wildlife, including the regulations of fishing and hunting within national heritage areas. National heritage areas do, they are established to tell a story of a region, to commemorate, conserve, and promote important natural, scenic, historic, cultural, and recreational attractions or resources. This is done by bringing people, organizations, and units of government together to work in partnership toward a common goal. National heritage areas are large, lived-in landscapes. Some are thousands of square miles in size, with millions of people living in them. Some have many less people living in them. Often citizens do not know they are even living or working within national heritage areas. Each national heritage area is managed by a separate board, generally a non-for-profit organization. However, a few are managed by state governments or universities. National heritage areas promote the economic well-being of an area and work to provide the quality of life for local residents, such as this is accomplished by creating educational and volunteer opportunities and developing business opportunities. An example of this would be businesses that support tourists traveling into or through areas. National heritage areas are a source of pride. They amplify what is special about your community or your region. Most national heritage areas have a federal funding authority sunset date and must be reauthorized by Congress for federal funding to continue. Six national heritage areas designated in 2019 have a federal funding authority of 15 years. Funding for national heritage areas can be used to coordinate partnerships, develop such things as sign plans or wayside finding signs, produce brochures, education curriculum, digital media apps. They provide training. They provide newsletters. That's some of the things that happen with that funding. Only Congress can establish a national heritage area. The National Park Service does not ask for national heritage areas to be established. Local citizens and communities ask for the designation. The National Park Service recommends that a feasibility study is undertaken to assess any proposed national heritage area by 10 national heritage area evaluation criteria. And I'll provide that list of 10 to you, Eric, and if you'd like me to send you an electronic copy to share with the rest of the board, I'll be happy to do that. Background information. I first became aware of the idea for a Kansas-Nebraska heritage area, I'm thinking in 2017, when the College of Architecture at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln was invited to Red Cloud to help identify strategies to build a stronger local and regional economy and improve the quality of life. I can remember talking to students doing research for their project at the Homestead Heritage Center and sharing with them our nation's epic homestead story and our visitation figures, and from this, the economic impact the park has on the community, Beatrice, and beyond. Later, I attended a public meeting in Red Cloud that had people in attendance from Kansas, Grand Island, Lincoln, and other communities. During this meeting, poster boards were used by students to share their findings. They reminded us of what was special about the area, including the many special places of local, state, and national significance that we as citizens of Nebraska and Kansas live next to or in close proximity to. It was at this presentation that the students first introduced their idea to work towards establishing a national heritage area for southern Nebraska and northern Kansas. I hope that this information provided you insight into what national heritage areas are and are not. as well. I hope you found the background information beneficial. Thanks for asking me to be with you this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions for Mr. Engler? Emily?
This lady had said that it would actually be more beneficial to do the National Heritages yourself, because then it's not that federal funding wouldn't be split in such a large area. It'd be specifically for one area. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's one of the things that I think, Emily, you're asking about the area to the area that they talked about within in that, I think, and if not, help me. But I think, I know that one of the things that came out of the discussion in Red Cloud is a quote from Cather, and I believe it was from her writings with My Antonia when she had written, "There's nothing but land, not a country at all, but the material out of which countries are made." And, you know, I guess from when I was sitting in the audience, I recognized many things within that area that that amplified Cather's writings. And I know that part of the discussion within this Kansas-Nebraska area is like, what's the area going to be called? And it's I know discussions have centered around many things, but like has already been shared with the meeting in the discussions here this morning, it's really about bringing people together. It's really about encouraging people to work together. And if we're not within the designated area, then I don't think we can, I'm not sure, but I don't think we can opt in if we're not within the designated area.
Mark.
That's my understanding. Dude, I don't know, Emily, if I answered the question.
I just made it sound like there's ways to opt in, but it would almost be better. I don't know. I'll have to read a little bit more, but it was one way or the other with opting in, and so it makes me seem to think that we don't all have to opt in. Individuals can.
Emily, I'm happy to provide you with. I'm not an expert in the area. I'm not an expert with National Heritage Areas, and I'll be happy to provide you the contact information if you'd want to contact any of our experts within the national parks. Because I know we have a person with our regional office that I'd be happy to put you in contact with, or even our Washington office person that deals with National Heritage Areas.
Are your people and yourself feeling positive about this or not?
It's not really our place to suggest the best path forward for local communities. This is something that's really truly an optional thing for any community, and so anyway, it's totally up to each individual, you know, and it's something that we as the National Park Service we don't decide. It's something that local communities, local citizens, as they take it forward, and it's actually Congress decides if this thing is, this National Heritage Area is to actually be designated, and but it's really something that local citizens drive, and local citizens work with Congress, and because in the end it's Congress's decision.
To be fair to Mark, it's probably not a fair question for him as the director to say yes or no just because he said the Park Service doesn't request this. He's just trying to bring us overall information.
I just looked at it as a group who are making a decision here when we do this. Is it an advantage, a disadvantage? What do we gain by doing it? What do we not gain? And that's what we're elected to do. And I just don't know. I haven't been shown that this is a tremendous advantage for us, and haven't shown that it was a negative either. But I always worry when we get into these things, eventually, are they going to want money? Is there going to be some issues financially? And
any other questions for Mark?
Any federal dollars through the National Park Service spent in the area? There has been.
You mean within the park, outside the park?
Outside the park. For example, water line.
Yes, Don. I know that several years ago, to help create the West Beatrice Water District, the National Park Service provided funds for that as well. I know there are other programs that right now are taking place in communities across the United States, like the Land and Water Conservation Fund stateside. And like when you go to I believe it's like the West Beatrice ball fields, you look at the placards on the back of those ball diamonds, and those funds are coming to our communities through the National Park Service, through the Land and Water Conservation statewide funds. So there's also other programs like the National Register for Historic Places.
Is NEPA programs addressed?
No, I don't really know how. I understand that NEPA is part of the initial plan that it might. I should say I don't really know that much about NEPA with National Heritage Areas. I don't really know that. I've been told that once the plan, the board produces their plan, that it there's a NEPA part within that. I know at the park, we do NEPA on most every project that we work on. For instance, like we're going to be, you all just finished last year putting down asphalt on 89th Road. And Galen came by and we appreciated that. Galen came by and said, Mark, do you guys know that we're doing this? And maybe you want to put down new asphalt in your parking lot. And sure enough, that's what we wanted to do to make sure that we were matching up with you all. So in order for us to complete the asphalt project, we had to do our NEPA compliance and our 106 compliance. And basically for that is we go through a checklist and we identify what's impacted, what's not impacted. If there are no impacts, we note that. And so anyway, it's just part of our normal life that we do. We do that with regardless if it's an asphalt project or if it's re-roofing a historic structure. So it's just part of our life.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it, and I don't think anyone would make the argument that the homestead's not a major benefit to our area.
Thank you, Eric.
You are wonderful, and we appreciate everything you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
We have a heritage area already. We got it right out there.
We do. Right. We're very lucky. Mr. Hansen, would you want to come up and state your name and position, and thank you for your patience.
You bet. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and Senator Byers. It's always a pleasure to see you. I am John Hansen, and I'm the president of Nebraska Farmers Union. And as you've already heard this morning, I get phone calls from lots of folks asking me all different kinds of questions. So I also got a call from Don Schuler, who said, could you do some research and some digging into this and give us your take on this issue? And I did talk to Terry earlier, and it's been on my to-do list. We testified on 50 bills this last legislative session, and so I've been married to the legislature, and so you have a to-do list, which started last week when the legislature's over. So I've spent two or three days digging into this, and so from do you need a mic here? Are you okay? From our standpoint, what Farmers Union tries to do is to continually look for opportunities to improve the economic well-being and the quality of life of family farmers, ranchers, and members of the rural community. So that gets us into all of the farm program things, all of the rural economic development things, all of the things that we can do to do value-added agriculture. All of those things get covered. So we're always on the hunt for tools in the toolbox that rural communities can use. We know that when the census data comes in, and I've been doing this job for 32 years, and every time we do a census, everything that our eyes have been telling us, and as you drive through rural Nebraska, you know that it's not a good sign when you see more and more of the stores that you've gone to in the past, that you've seen in the past, that are boarded up. You're seeing the footprint of rural communities continuing to shrink. You're seeing more and more depopulation. You're seeing more and more rural areas struggle to keep, base things in place. So, anytime we can do things at the state level, at the federal level, that puts more tools in the toolbox for local folks to use to try to create jobs and opportunities and keep more of our kids in rural communities, we're all about that. So from what I can see looking at this, and what I told Terry was right, and that is that our as we look at decision making and we look at control, we prefer local control. As you look at federal, state, and local control, there is no other organization in the state of Nebraska that has more consistently fought to protect local control than Farmers Union. And we've done it when it was fashionable, and we've done it when it was not fashionable. And we went to war with Governor Ricketts when he tried to replace local decision-making with a top-down controlled matrix system. And we said local folks ought to be making that decision. That's what they're elected to do. And whether we agree or disagree all the time with what they decide, we prefer that. And the reason we do is because of all the different levels of government, the local folks are the only ones who actually live with the consequences of their own decision making. So if they get it wrong, they're the only one who has the vested interest to fix it. So if folks in Lincoln make a decision about what goes on in rural Nebraska and they don't ever go there, so what? They don't have to deal with it at the coffee shop. They don't have to deal with it at the ball game. They don't have to deal with it because it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And so that's why I keep the files I actually need to do something with on my desk until I've actually done them, because if I take them off my desk, I'm likely to forget about them. So we looked at the practice here in terms of, does this impact local control? And we don't think it does, that we can tell. I looked at what our counterparts in Kansas, who have already dealt with a heritage area, are thinking. I read articles that Ryan Flickner at the Kansas Farm Bureau, who's the senior director of advocacy, says no eminent domain, no government buyout, that type of stuff. If there was a major issue, if there was a true target out here, a genuine concern, I think you'd see the Farm Bureau and Kansas Livestock Association and wheat and corn and all the others in that community really be up in arms. They're not. Another part of the article that I pulled down yesterday was from the Kansas Livestock Association and their legal counsel, who also comes from a ranching family, and says, we just don't see it. We don't see a threat. We've had no, conflicts. We've seen no issues with it. I talked to Don Teske, who's the president of the Kansas Farmers Union, who also is an even bigger history nut than I am. And he's one of the guys who gives tours of all kinds of kids and 4-H kids and FFA kids about the heritage in their area and the history and the settlements and who was where and things of significance. And so I said, what's your experience? And he said, well, we've been generally in support, because it's another tool in the toolbox. And so you don't have to use it, but if you want to use it, you can. So from my perspective, I read the statutes. Don read you a bunch of the statutes. That frames it. That's not just words on a paper. That's the law. So that's, they have to follow within that framework. So I see no attack on personal property. I don't see those things. And what I do see from my perspective is, for me, 30 miles down the road, is I see Gage County as a huge, has a huge asset in the National Monument. My great-great-great-grandparents homesteaded, and I can go there and I can look that up. And it's a big draw. So the way we see this is about the business who are, this is not for everyone, but for people who are into history and heritage, and I wish more of us were, because I think our heritage is very important. This is trying to get more folks who already come into the area to see things of historical significance stay longer, buy more meals, spend more time overnight. So you're expanding the economic benefits of what Gage County already has as a national draw. So you have the first cemetery ever established in Nebraska. You have Dempster. You have a great museum. More folks who come to the National Center and takes advantage of that. These are folks who don't want to just drive by and say, I saw it, while they're going slow. They want to get out and dig into things. So does Gage County have a lot of things to sell that are of historical significance? I would say yes. So here's where I'm landing this morning, relative to sort of where we at, where are you guys at in this process, is I spent 14 years as a local government official before I was elected president of Farmers Union. And, everything has a time and everything has a place. And in my opinion, this process is so early in the development process that I think that if I had a recommendation I would make to you this morning, is you really need to wait and see what comes of this and what is developed. And if you have concerns or you have issues, I would have input into that process. So when I was helping build the largest ground and surface, or the largest multi-purpose water project in the state of Nebraska, the opposition already knew what we were going to do and what was wrong with the project before we had even developed the plan. And so I'm familiar with that phenomenon. And so what we kept saying to our landowners and the community is, this is your chance to have input into the process, but wait until it's ripe. Wait until you know what all these things are and also what we can do to accommodate your concerns. And so I see this as an opportunity if it's used properly. And so I would keep my powder dry. And I think that you're going to have a lot better idea after things get developed. And that also gives the public a chance to weigh in and say, yes, we think it's a good idea. No, we think it's a bad idea. Or what nature beast is it? So that's what I would offer you this morning. And I appreciate the opportunity for me to get somewhat smarter than when Terry first called me. And I still have a long ways to go. And I tell you that last night I got partway through the Congressional Research Service analysis of heritage areas, and then I decided it was time for me to go to sleep. Thank you.
I've been telling you for years we're a lot smarter in Gage County.
I do remember that, yes.
Any questions for Mr. Hansen? Terry has a question for you. Terry, you'll have to come up to the mic for the record. Please give your name, too.
Terry Acton. My question to John would be, can you tell me the name of the KLA legal representation or who conveyed that to you?
Terry, I read it in an article, and let's see here. It was an article in the Dickinson County News Times, it was Aaron, P-O-P-E-L-K-A, Popelka, I think, and he was the vice president and of legal and government affairs. Findings were the same as Flickner's. He referred to that, and he says, Not only am I legal counsel for KLA, but my family farms and ranches in Republic County, where I own land and cattle, and my personal property right is in the middle of this thing, et cetera, et cetera. But I got it out of the Dickinson County News and Times.
Any other questions for John?
Thanks for all you do, John.
You bet. My research assistant's name is Google.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Great. We have our economic director, also our chamber executive director. Do either of you want to touch on this at all?
You have an 11-foot pole, or?
I was going to say, you may or may not want to.
Trevor Lee, executive director for Engage. It's a board we haven't talked about it. This is so new. I've learned a lot about it just the last few days. I'm kind of with John. I'd just wait and see and let the process kind of begin, because they haven't really even begun the local. I don't think the stakeholder is a scary word, but getting together stakeholders and see if there's local support. And they might find that there's no support and it's not included in their application. So that's just my two cents on it.
Any questions for Trevor? You got away pretty easy.
All right. Thanks.
Angie, anything? Give you a chance.
I'm Angie Bruno at the Beatrice Chamber and Gage County Tourism. I had the pleasure of attending in a meeting with Mark Engler. Gosh, it's been two and a half years ago already. So I have some basic knowledge about it. As a chamber board, we haven't discussed it or taken a position. In looking at it from a tourism overreach, or not overreach, that's a terrible word, overview. We are always looking for ways to partner, not only to attract visitors from Gage County to Gage County, but we're part of groups that are for the whole Southeast Nebraska region. We very much see a benefit of working together, because we might have Homestead National Historical Park, which is a great asset, but if we can get them here, get them to stay overnight and then travel on to another region, we've increased our lodging tax revenue. We've had extra people eating in our restaurants. We've had extra people shopping in our stores. I would really encourage you to take the opportunity to explore further what economic impact that can have on our region. So there are pros and there are always cons. But if we can look for opportunities to partner as a greater region for the state of Nebraska and spread our wings a little further and our reach that way, it's definitely worth looking into from a tourism standpoint.
Any questions for Angie? Thank you, Ms. Bruno. Yeah. This is not an action item. This is for discussion only. Is there any other discussion from the board? We have one more person that would like to speak. Ms. Mason, would you like to come up?
I'm Ashley Mason, and I want to thank you all for taking the time to discuss this issue, and I want to thank Terry at the Planning and Zoning for all his work on this issue as well. I'm here on behalf of a large, growing group of citizens in Beatrice and Gage County, many of whom could not make this early morning meeting. Many counties in Nebraska and Kansas have been discussing the possibility of the Heritage Act concerning land in these two states. Our group has personally contacted as many other areas as possible who have something similar or the same. Not one citizen that we contacted had a positive thing to say. So our group looked further, because we need to be conscious of the fact that when the federal government gets involved, there are a lot more strings. An ongoing issue is that there is no trust in the federal government, making it easy for citizens to be leery of any ideas coming out of the administration. The idea for the Heritage Act is presented as a way to encourage cultural heritage tourism, which could translate into federal dollars coming into participating counties to further historic tourism. When first proposed, it did have the tourism catch, but when you really get into it, it becomes a large government overreach, with the possibility of the federal government saying we need to return all this farmland back to native grass. Once you let the federal government get its toes in the door, how do you plan to stop them from coming all the way in? The purpose of this act is to promote tourism, to preserve historical heritage. But what safeguards are in place to protect private landowners from doing what they want to do with their own land? Furthermore, how will these government funds be used in our community as it is largely agricultural now? There isn't a current need to preserve our history here in Gage County or to further historical tourism because we already have multiple opportunities here for that, the Homestead National Monument, the Gage County Historical Museum, and N-Gage works at that as well. Nothing is for free. These funds from the federal government would have to be matched locally, dollar for dollar. Citizens here see no advantage to this. We have our own Visitors Bureau, which does a great job. The program is simply an unnecessary duplicate of what we already have in place. Citizens of Gage County don't want to ever be part of this Heritage Act. I'd like to take a moment to compare an existing program with the one being proposed. Please look at the maps I've provided for you. The map and numbers provided come from a report in Kansas by Mary Paola. Let us look at the Freedom's Frontier National Heritage Area that is already in Kansas and in western Missouri. National heritage areas push economic development and tourism. So if an area has economic development, that should allow for an increase in population as more jobs are available. How is the population in these counties benefited by being a national heritage area? What has the population done in the 40 counties of the FFNHA that was established in 2006 and the management plan was approved in 2009? Meaning there was a difference between what was proposed and approved at Congress in 2006 and what changed in a three-year period. Of the 40 counties in FFNHA, only 13 counties saw an increase in population. One would think that a national heritage area would promote growth and the promise of economic development. However, of the 40 counties in the FFNHA, 27 counties saw a decrease in population. Where are the jobs? Where is the economic development? Less than 28% of the counties saw an actual increase in population. The increases were seen in large metropolitan areas already, Manhattan, Kansas, Fort Riley, and the Kansas City, Missouri area. Just a little over 72% saw a decrease in population. If the proposed Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership becomes an NHA, will it truly help economic development and tourism for the 27 counties in Nebraska, or will it become like the Freedom's Frontier NHA? Gage County is already struggling to bring in new business and grow its population. Gage County citizens already have to look outside of their own county to meet many of their needs. How can a possible decrease in business and population benefit its citizens? Another issue that lays heavy on Gage County citizens' mind is the 30 by 30 executive order that does not say what land has been selected for the permanent control of the federal government. In some of the wording of the 30 by 30 included in the Center for American Progress report, lands included to be permanently protected include national parks, wilderness areas, permanent conservation easements, state parks, national wildlife refuges, national monuments, or other protected areas. Could national heritage areas be considered other protected areas? We don't know. Foundations for national heritage areas are rarely forthcoming with information when people ask hard questions. We saw that today. We asked hard questions and she kept circling back. You cannot use the Freedom of Information Act to obtain information because they are not government entities. Yet the NHAs can regulate these areas because they are areas to set aside for heritage purposes. We saw that again today by another caller. Once an unelected organization has control of our lands, what power will the elected have to stop them if they have already given that power away? Think long and hard about this. That map tells us the facts, as do the numbers on population growth. Do you really think this proposed Kansas-Nebraska National Heritage Area Partnership will truly benefit Gage County? Gage County citizens are the root of this county. They are the grassroots. They do not want the government to come in and uproot us. One of the United States' democratizing characteristics has been a relatively widespread possibility of land ownership. With this proposed plan, we are going backwards and taking land from citizens. Thou shall not steal is found almost universally at the core of legal systems. The implication of this is that property and property ownership are universally considered to be of central importance. Gage County board members, I ask you to take a stand and protect the citizens of Gage County by refusing to be a part of this National Heritage Act. Do not allow the federal government to steal from its citizens. We cannot allow them to pass vague acts that they can further define after they have control. Remember, please, that while there are two sides of this issue, the pros and cons can be talked about for many more hours to come. Your responsibility is to your constituents, those who elect you. They expect you to represent them and no other government agency and or park, and definitely not a nonprofit group or an organization. Thank you for your time today.
Any questions for Ms. Mason?
How many citizens are in your group?
In our group, we have over 75.
Did you hear me read the law to you today?
I did hear you read the law today, and I've also numerous times seen the government break its own laws. So a law in writing does not bring us any comfort.
So you choose not to believe federal law, but choose to believe speculation?
I didn't say that. I said that I've seen federal law be broken by its own lawmakers.
But your speech, and can I have a copy of that, by the way?
No. But you can find it on the Gage County website.
She refuses?
It's her speech.
She doesn't need to
get it. She's on the record.
Okay.
Did you have another question?
Yes, but it slipped my mind now.
You know where to find me if you need it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Mason. Well, with that, we don't have an action item here. We have just discussion.
Can Jim comment? Because many of the...
Emily, what do you have?
I just had one thing. I was searching last night, and I found it's called the Heritage Foundation. It's a website online. It's a group that... let's see their statement here. They advocate for individual liberty, limited government, free enterprise, traditional American values. I got to find it here. A journalist worked with... a PhD he's a research fellow for economic policy studies. So he works with this Heritage Foundation. But I just wanted to read a couple paragraphs in here that I found pretty interesting. Nonetheless, NHAs pose a threat to private property rights through exercise of restrictive zonings that may severely limit the extent to which property owners can develop or use their property. Termed regulatory takings, such as zoning abuses, are the most common form of property rights abuse today. They are also the most pernicious because they do not require any compensation to owners whose property values are reduced by new zoning. While NHA defenders are quick to point out that neither the NPS nor the management entity are empowered to zone or take property, many NHAs encourage participating local governments to adopt land use practices consistent with the management plan. As will be discussed later, there are a number of instances where more restrictive zoning practices followed on the heels of an NHA designation. Farther down in the conclusion of their very, very long article, it says, still, it does not directly prove that NHA designation diminishes or threatens private property rights, but the suggested courses of action as put forth in the management plans required as part of NHA designation and subsequent oversight do, in fact, compromise the ability of property owners to use the land as they see fit. It is one thing to opt out of the NHA declaration, which is allowed in the accompanying legislation and regulation. But it is another thing entirely to try to opt out of ordinances and laws created by the local government at the recommendation of the MPS or the management entity. That's just kind of summed up. Thought it was good information that they put out.
Any overreach is always scary, and that's met with apprehension. It sounds like just in the brief information we get, Mr. Ogle's organization, Freedom Frontier, evidently is run pretty well if people aren't being bothered by anything. I would suggest all of you keep thinking about this, and if there is any action we want to take, It would be at a later date than today, of course. But if we want to bring this up at committee meetings, it's definitely had some. I appreciate everyone that spoke. There's a lot of good information here today. But like I say, we don't have an action item, so I'm sure this will come up at committee meetings again for additional discussion.
I'd definitely like the public to, or get the public's input, reach out.
Well, this is a good way to start that, too. Let's the public know. We're going to ask Scooter and Doug to let everybody know what we're talking about, and I'm sure they'll get back to us with their opinions. It usually doesn't take very long, and the opinions come our way in a hurry, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But does anyone else on the board have anything here?
I just want to note that Freedom Frontier Heritage Area, that Lyon County is not part of that. That's correct, I believe. And that is part of the Flint Hills, is it? Flint Hill Regional Council? And that's completely different than Freedom
Is the Frontier? Flint Hills National Council. Is that
it's not a national, I don't believe. Flint but Hills that's why Council. I guess I would prefer to talk to Jim because
Regional Council, I'm
Regional
sorry.
Council, there
is
you
that
go.
Is that a heritage area? It is not.
It is not. And that's where the barbed wire issue come about, is in that Flint Hills, which is not a heritage area. Yeah. So I don't understand how heritage areas had anything to do with superseding county zoning. I don't know how that Flint Hills Regional Council did either, but it's two different things.
Flint Hills Frontier.
Terry, could I get you to talk into the microphone?
Is Angel still on or not?
Yeah, she's here.
Ask Angel.
Well, I would like to, and I would like to be able for Jim to comment, too.
Yeah, if you have a specific question for either of them.
Thank you.
Angel, can you answer the question?
Yes, you are correct. The Flint Hills Regional Council is not part of Freedom's Frontiers at all. I had absolutely no idea that there was a National Heritage Area in Kansas until we started looking at the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership. The relationship between Freedom's Frontiers National Heritage Area and Flint Hills Regional Council is through partnership, or I don't know what the technical term is for Freedom Frontiers. I don't know that they are stakeholders or they are partners or they simply work with Freedom's Frontiers. They share a lot of, I know in the Kansas-Nebraska Heritage Area Partnership, the board members of that are also, some of them, are also on the North Central Regional Planning Commission, which is a lot like a regional council, just in a different name. So it's kind of I hate to say this, an old term that my mom always said, birds of a feather tend to flock together. They are a work with Freedom's Frontiers National Heritage Area. And you bring up a very interesting point. When I talked about the phone calls that I get from the area of Freedom's Frontiers, the number one question that I get from people down there, the number two is, why wasn't I told? I had no idea that this was here. My number one question is this why my county is now adopting zoning regulations, even though we've never had them before? Or is this why the zoning is getting more strict in my area? And the answer is, I don't know. The reason I don't know is because I cannot drop Freedom of Information requests on the Flint Hills Regional Council or any of the other entities that they are working with. I do not know how much involvement there is. I do know that there are regional councils or planning commissions all over the state. You may have one over Gage County there. You'll know because they usually have either city or county commissioners participating in those planning commissions. So it's kind of a joint effort. It's as it was mentioned earlier, a tool a tool in which to meet a goal. And I would refer to it as the view or the view shed. So they pick a point on the map and say, this is the view. And then everything around that view then has to comply with or gets adopted into these regulations to create a specific view shed. It's kind of how that works. It gets a little bit complicated as to, and you can't figure it out completely due to the lack of freedom of information requests.
Thank you, Angel. Did you have a specific question for Jim?
Yeah, Jim. As you stated earlier, and I just want to confirm this, you have never been to a Planning and Zoning Committee meeting as an executive director for Freedom Frontier.
That is correct. And we have no communication or interaction with the Flint Hills Regional Council. It was mentioned earlier that we may share some board members. We do not. And we have not. State of Kansas has these regional councils all over the place, but they don't interact with us and we don't interact with them.
Thank you, Jim. I think with that, we've had a couple hours of debate on this, or discussion,
you,
I should say. I'd ask you all to do some thinking on everything. Thank you. If we want to take action here, like I say, it'll come up at committee meetings. With that, I believe if there's still want, we could take a five minute break. Are you guys ready to keep going? Keep going. All right. Well, thank you all. I suppose now would be a good time. You're welcome to stay on with our meeting if you want to listen in online or in the audience here. But we will move on to approve or disapprove the agreement with Region 5 Systems for Emergency Protective Custody Services, with the term of the agreement being July 1st, 2021 through June 30th, 2022.
I would move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Byers, second by Dorn. I'll just check with counsel. You have any issue with any of this?
No. Basically, this is an opportunity we get through Region 5 to help us with the costs associated with emergency protective custody placements. And it's very beneficial to the county. It also helps with some of the controlling some of the – I didn't want to use controlling because we really don't control. They assist us, though, in keeping the costs down as far as they can. So I'd recommend approval.
Any discussion? Motion by Byers, second by Dorn to approve. Please vote. Seven in favor. Whoops. Motion carries. Approve or disapprove the agreement between Beatrice Area Chamber of Commerce and the County of Gage for the purpose of Nebraska Visitors Development Act in Gage County Tourism, for the term of 2 years, effective July 1st, 2021 through June 30th, 2023.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Haxby, second by Juergens to approve. Any discussion? Great program.
It's a wonderful relationship.
I think this has gotten stronger over the years, too. Got some neat stuff coming out this year again, some great maps, some great productivity through this.
It was much stronger when we had a different director for the June. Oh, she's not listening. I can't figure her hard time.
I was just going to say they do a good job with tourism, too.
Okay, all right.
It's all state dollars.
With that, I'd ask you to vote. Seven in favor. Motion carries. Well, the rest of this agenda is going pretty quick. Approve or disapprove Parks and Recreation Improvement Grant application, the Matt Bauman grant, in the amount of $1,000 for the Village of Pickerel for picnic tables and benches in the park and at the community center pergola. There's a copy of the request here. The Village of Pickerel has been very proactive in applying for this every year, trying to improve their park area and their community hall. There's a picture of the There's a picture of the tables if anyone would like to see them. Looks like a 46-inch square with benches and mounting hardware. This will...
Motion to approve.
Second.
This will go in the park there. We have a motion by Dorn, second by Haxby. Any discussion? This is open to any municipality for improvements like this. As long as there's money available, please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. We have a closed session on personnel. This will be a brief closed session, and we will take action after the closed session with the addition of one last item. But I would ask for a motion to go into closed session at 11:11, necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved.
Second.
Third.
Moved by Lytle, second by Dorn, thirded by Byers. Go into closed session at 11:11. Please vote. 7 in favor. We are in closed session.
We'll never forget.
After an hour of conversation.
In direct conflict with the city of Beatrice, we are going to ask for a motion to come out of closed session at 11:17.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Shuler to come out of closed session, 11:17. Please vote. 7 in favor. We're back in open session. I would ask for a motion to approve or disapprove hiring Mike Kunkey as the new highway superintendent.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Haxby. Second by Dorn. After a request for applications, the Road and Bridge Committee went through and did interviews. They found a person they believe is going to be well qualified for this. He'll work under Galen until Galen's retirement. And then at that point in time, he will be handed the reins, and hopefully he's ready to go, at least ready to walk. But we have a motion by Haxby, second by Dorn. Any discussion on this?
No, he's ready to run, not walk.
Well, I'm hoping they're ready to at least walk. If he's ready to, Galen will be ready to run. I'll ask you.
That's
to vote.
What I was talking about.
7 in favor. Motion carries. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn at 11:18.
Move to adjourn.
Somebody so moved.
Moved by Haxby, second by Dorn. See how many red lights there are. Please vote. 6 in favor.
No, today is not
Lytle
today.
Lytle voting no. We are adjourned at 11:19. Ha ha ha.